You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
Mail It In Friday, brought to you by sportsmarketplace.ca, the place to buy and sell all things sports. It's where sports fans go to put their stuff on waivers. And I'm not sure if we're going to mail it in today because Mike Johnson's in here. And Johnny, you got to basically pull the weight of two individuals because O is not here today and Noodles also not here today. So you have to represent both guys. Are you prepared to do that or what?
I am. I think I can handle it. Given that, you know, the participation is not always 100% by both.
Mm-hmm.
They both kind of moderate their own roles at their own pace. It should be okay.
What's it like watching that on TV? Like, I'm here witnessing it, but I have a very different viewpoint. Like, if you watch and O is gone.
Yes.
And Noodles is on his laptop.
Yes.
Like, what is that? What's that like?
It's like, sometimes I'll shoot them notes during the show. And then they'll read them, and I chuckle. I can see them getting my notes and reading them, and
right, and
reacting real time. But imagine it would look normal if you didn't know the guys so well. Like if I didn't know when O was, you know, not participating or something else is going on. If I didn't know Noodle's always on his computer checking stats. It obviously works, man. You guys got a good flow, so I'll just try not to screw it up.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say it's like big shoes to fill, but there's some shoes. It's two pairs of shoes that you got to fill.
Well, see, I'm always trying to defer because I assume if there's three people here usually and there's two now, I would assume each of us has to pick up 50% of the slack.
Right.
And you have to drop a little bit more of an analyst hat and not just the moderator host.
That's a good point.
So I'm thinking that you, more than me, given it's your show every day.
Yeah.
That's the one who has to be a little bit better.
Yeah, maybe it is more on me.
Well, that's how I'm going to spin it.
That
anyways.
Actually makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And there's some rumors out there. I don't know if we're going to do it, but like trivia has become a big thing on the show, right? And yesterday I took on O.
I heard.
Yeah. And
I was impressed.
I thought I performed pretty well.
You did. Admirably.
Very much so. I missed out on Koliakovo going 17th overall.
Did you hear from Carlo after that?
I saw him today. Yeah. Well, he sent me a text last night. He was laughing about it, but he's like, come on, man. Like, I played with him all the way up. We were teammates. Like, I remember watching that draft thinking, Carlo, here we go. They're on the
17.
Clock. 17.
There you go.
Pat Quinn, here we go. Let's see what they do. Hey, there he is. He's a Maple Leaf. Like, I remember living that vividly, yet yesterday I buckled under pressure.
That is tremendous.
And
you got Liljegren.
I got Liljegren.
Random guy who's not on the team. Why
you know what? We haven't even brought him up.
I know.
Like, spontaneously, now that we're on it. And when Sheldon Keefe came up, I thought to myself, isn't this the only opportunity this guy's going to get to prove that he is an NHL player, not a bust? Because Keefe has coached him for 2 years now. Keefe went out of his way to pump his tires all during the playoff run last year, during the summer. Every time we spoke with Sheldon Keefe, we'd give him the opportunity to talk about Liljegren, and he went off. Man, he's working on his defensive play. We wouldn't have won these games or these series without him. He's a true, you know, stud for us at this point. And now he's up. The defense core is what it is. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly the, you know, late 70s Habs we're talking about here. And I don't get the impression like he is even close to getting a look.
Not this year. Next year he will be.
Will he?
Yeah.
What if he's not capable of doing it?
He's going to have to be capable. I mean, that's the corner they painted themselves into. And I admittedly, I don't watch a lot of Marley's games.
I'm with you on that.
I watch a lot of NHL games. I'll watch exhibition games, but I won't watch a lot of Marley games. Mm-hmm. Like, day's busy enough as it is. But from what I've read from people who do watch it, who track it, who are a little more carefully in tune with what's going on down there, is that he's actually been pretty good. You got to remember, he's also very young still. You know, not a lot of teenagers play in that league on defense, and he's dealing with that. And so, he's probably better than maybe he's getting credit for. But the fact is, Barry's gone, Cece's gone, Muzzin maybe. That's kind of how it feels.
Feels like Muzzin is the most likely guy to come back.
Right.
Like, now, let's see what Tyson Barry does the rest of the year.
He's going to leave.
You think so?
100%.
What if he loves Sheldon Keefe? What if he loves playing in Toronto?
They're going to pay him $8 million?
Well, he's got to prove that he's worth it.
Even if he does prove it, they're not going to pay it.
Yeah, in a weird way, you almost need him to be really bad so that
their
you
best chance would have been Babcock to stay the whole year, and he puts up 22 points.
Right.
And he instead of $8 million, he's asking for $5 million.
He is loving the Keith Barra.
And it completely, you know, the best part about it, and I've been on crappy teams, a whole bunch of them, where you lose your coach. whatever was going on before, however bad you're playing, as gross as your stat line might have been, it's all gone. It is just wiped away like it never even happened. And not just like mentally as well. Like, doesn't matter. I didn't, no goals in 22 games, whatever it was. Doesn't matter at all. I'm 3 for 3 with this guy. That's all he cares about. And for him in a contract year, that's all any team that looks at him, because they'll just chalk it up to bad fit, bad usage. That's not who you were.
Right.
All gone. Like complete free pass, which are so rare to come by in pro sports.
Well, and that's exactly, I don't know who his agent is, but that's what his agent will be peddling. Like if he keeps rolling here, and even on July 1st, let's say he goes unsigned for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And he might. Maybe he sits on a couple of deals. Some team gets back in thinking, hey, maybe the deals weren't as good as people thought they'd be. On July 2nd, you call him up and say, we've been looking at the game tape for the first 20 games.
Yeah.
That's not going to fly.
No.
That all
doesn't want to hear it. If he goes 40 points in 60 games.
Yeah.
And he ends up with 40 points, let's say, this year.
Well, that would be consistent with who he's been as an NHL player.
Which is what he's always done.
Yeah. The outlier was the first 23 games.
You'd like to think.
I mean, based on who he's been in the NHL.
But the only concern would be, because it was such a slow start, can he not play in anywhere but Colorado? If he struggled under Keefe as well, is it not so much the usage of the system? Is it just that it was so comfortable in Colorado and he was so... Wherever he goes, if it's not Colorado again, would you suffer the same kind of struggles?
I think he's got all the records for a defenseman, like games played, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he's. I thought he would light it up here. I thought it'd be just easy and seamless.
Yeah.
But I also thought he'd be on the first power play right away.
Well, it appears to be
the case now.
Yeah, we'll see when Marner comes back. Like when Marner comes back, something's going to have to change.
Willie.
Willie for sure.
But if Willie's going great still, I'm not saying Marner's not on there, but JT, Austin are on there for sure, right? No matter what. Tavares and Matthews are on the power play.
Yeah.
Marner's going to be on the first unit, 100%. So there are these two more spots. So
one
Riley,
of them will be a defenseman, I think.
Barry, Nylander. One of those guys is going to be the odd man out.
Dubas told this story. Now, Dubas obviously took issue with this idea by Sheldon Keefe, but when Keefe was with the Marlies a couple of years ago, he was experimenting with five forwards on the power play.
Yes, guy.
And
that's a yes, guy.
It was a serious yes, guy for Keefe. Now, again, Dubas said he didn't like it, and they blew up on each other. I don't know if that works in the NHL.
It will. Totally fine. Now, you need one guy who's like remotely proficient. Like Boston does it quite often. Now, they have Torrey Krug, but when he's not around, they let David Krejci be a regular shift defenseman or occasionally the only guy out there who's not the only four forwards, five forwards, he's the only guy. But he plays defense relatively well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would make a lot of sense if you didn't have two of the best offensive defensemen on your team already. So you got guys.
Well, that's it, right?
You don't need to force that to happen. Although I love it. Did you see this past week the crazy comeback Vegas last second against Nashville?
Mm-hmm.
6-on-5, goalie pulled, tied it up.
Six forwards. Yeah, but that makes more sense for them.
Because they don't have that guy.
They don't have that stud.
Nate Schmidt back there. Che Theodore is our closest thing, I guess.
Right, but he's more like a 45-point guy.
He's not Riley. He's not Barry.
No, exactly. And I got to believe Barry will probably be given the first crack at it. Like, Riley will likely move around.
Mm.
We'll see. I mean, there's some politics behind that because Riley's the man, and he was the man before Barry got here, and I'm sure you got to deal with that to an extent. But we'll see. It's a pretty busy day throughout the NHL. It's a bit of a strange day because there's all these hockey games going on right now. But then you also get the Bill Peters story that broke.
Right.
And we had heard through the grapevine that, it felt like it was coming to some sort of a conclusion. No guarantees that it was going to be today, but it turns out that it was. And Brad Treliving, their GM, had a press conference earlier this afternoon in Calgary where he made the announcement. And this surprised me. I was not expecting to hear that Bill Peters technically resigned as the head coach. Wasn't fired.
Mm-hmm.
He resigned as the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all been of the understanding that there's a lot of legalese involved in this. The lawyers are involved because of the circumstance. I mean, it's easy for all of us to say, just fire him, get rid of him.
Yeah.
We don't want to see him again. I understand that take. I understand that emotion. But it was with a different organization a long time ago. There's no video, no audio. He's being paid a lot of money. So you knew it was going to take some time. They technically had to do their due diligence. But I don't think this panned out in an ideal fashion for Calgary based on the optics.
Right.
I think because of the nature of the allegations that have been corroborated by multiple teammates with Akeem Aliyu, firing him would have gone a long way. Saying, we're not going to accept this, and we're going to represent the league on this. I think the league should have been hoping for this. Because the idea that he resigned, to me, speaks of maybe some sort of a deal or allowing him to say, hey, I'm going to take this one, or I'm, you know, now after self-reflection, I've decided it's in my best interest. Bill Peters wasn't going to resign 3 days ago.
Right.
So what changed?
Right.
I mean, for me, if I'm the league, if I'm Bettman in particular, I would much prefer the headline say, Flames fire Bill Peters.
Yeah.
As opposed to he resigned.
After 4 days.
After 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Because would the Flames, were they going to fire him?
I did not. And yes. He was asked that question, was Trey Levy in the press conference.
And he said, he dodged it.
I don't deal in hypotheticals. That's not a hypothetical.
No, it's
not. All you've been thinking about for 3 days.
It was a reality last night.
It's 100% a reality. Is it like, what would I do if I won the lottery? That's a hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
What would you, were you going to fire him? That's all you've thought about, presumably, as you went through this process. Now, it's a tough spot. Like, of course, optically, it doesn't look great. And I guess, you know, you hate to turn it to business-wise, because this is really, if it was a legal situation, if it was about the money and the contract, then it, you can kind of put a dollar on it. Because I think Bill Peters owed about $3.3 million Canadian for this year and next. So that's what they were trying to maybe save. Maybe precedent establishing, I'm not sure about that, but that's not really Calgary's fight. To have?
That's more in the league.
That's the league's fight. And they can retroactively look into this and then make a statement saying anything else that happens, this can now be considered cause, this could be whatever, fireable offense, whatever you, however you want to phrase it within the lawyers. But you'd have to say, okay, so by waiting 3 days or 4 days and have everyone kind of try to understand what you're going through with the legal ramifications, but also not really loving the fact that it's taking this long to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Was there $3 million worth of hit to your company? Whether in reputation, whether it's in sponsorship, whether it's in sales, whatever it is. Like you, that's basically what you're talking about. You're talking about $3 million swing.
Yeah.
So, and that's where people are like, I do get it. It's a massive company. Hockey organizations are billion-dollar companies or something close. Flames are worth $700 million, whatever it is. Could they have taken the higher road and just be like, nope. We'll fight for the $3 million later, but we're making it clear right now he's never coming. But whatever it is,
right? Exactly. And maybe it was more, you know, beyond that, a countersuit or something that Peters would be looking for even more. But how much more? And where do you place, you know, the integrity that is at issue here?
And these are all hard questions.
Absolutely.
Like it's easy to sit here on the sides and be like, what are these guys doing? Fire him!
Yeah,
come on!
Of course not.
Don't be an idiot. Like, of course he's got to get fired.
And even when people say that, they know that that's not actually a reality.
And that's not how the world works.
Yeah.
So I get all that, but and we were having the conversation earlier. I think Calgary Trey Living had handled the entire episode really quite as well as they could. I mean, if they're going to go down this road, if they weren't going to spontaneously fire him as soon as those Akeem Aliyu story was corroborated, then they did all they could. The last 2 days, everything about it has felt like it was written and said by lawyers.
Yes.
Because I think it was. And that leaves you feeling somewhat unsatisfied, unfulfilled, lack of sincerity by Bill Peters with his first letter, which I think was written by a lawyer, like even on a lawyer, like a legal file number on the top of the memo.
Ridiculous. And addressed to the GM.
Yes.
As if he was the victim in all this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And then even Trey Levin today... Again, you know, I'm sure there was things he wasn't supposed to delve into and he couldn't talk about. But, you know, the answer, I don't deal with hypotheticals. That's a lawyer answer because he doesn't want to get on record saying something he otherwise would.
Right.
You know, it just...
No, it was an empty feeling coming out of it.
It was an empty feeling. It didn't feel like... For a subject that, for everyone, but certainly for a lot of people, is a very passionate, guttural reaction to someone saying... What he said, whether it's to someone, around a mute, whatever, like, you want to feel that same kind of passionate, guttural, like, no, we're not standing for it. He's gone.
Well, and
you didn't feel that in the last couple
you
days.
You did not feel that at any time
no.
with the Flames. There wasn't much of a human element. it was like out of a textbook. Okay, this happened, and I understand that they were blindsided by the tweet.
Yes.
There's no preparation for it. They didn't expect it to happen, or they weren't waiting for it to come.
Yeah.
But it did. On top of it, the Carolina stories have been developing as well.
Okay.
Now, again, not Calgary's issue, but a bigger part of the Bill Peters conversation.
Well, what did you make of course, Trey Levin asked, what did you know, what kind of due diligence did you do in hiring him? And he said, categorically, I didn't hear anything like the stuff that just came out. What do you think of that?
I find it, I mean, I can't question that.
I believe he's truthful, I wonder how deep he really dove then.
Right, or who's covering for Bill Peters.
Because it doesn't feel, right, or maybe you made
the
call.
On the flip side of it.
And maybe, whether it's the former GM or assistant coach, like, no, he's a great guy, treated everyone well, everyone loved him. Somebody was, you either didn't ask the right questions of the right people, or you did, and those people were not up front about
it. It's one or the other.
Or
the third extreme option is he actually did know about it and decided not to accept
it. Can't say that now.
No.
No, he wouldn't have said a categorically deny.
Right.
You can't say that with all the legalese going on.
Well, that's very valid because Bill Peters could come out and say, actually in the meeting,
I told you. And you can't,
Yeah, so I think Trey Living, you know, he's smart enough to know that that's not an option at this point. But yeah, he either didn't ask the right questions, didn't do the proper vetting,
right,
or whoever he was posing the questions to, if they had the information, they didn't tell him.
Right.
Either way, I think Trey Living is clearly going to be under the spotlight. Like, his team has put him under the spotlight as a GM. They're not playing that well.
Right.
And now this is a fiasco. I'm still waiting for the commissioner to have some sort of comment on what has been the most volatile week, maybe in his history. Like, is Gary Bettman around?
Hang on. When he cancels seasons, like, those are probably more volatile.
But that is strictly business.
Yeah.
This is cultural.
Yeah.
Like, you're right in terms of, you shut down the league for a year. That's pretty serious.
Yeah.
And that pisses people off.
Right.
But this is about the culture of the game. This is about the grassroots of the game.
Yeah.
This is a movement that
touches a lot more people that are not maybe just diehard hockey
fans. And it didn't start here. Like, Don Cherry, we know what happened with Cherry a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And Bettman was up here for that conference, and he said, I'm not touching that. Okay, well, that was a massive story in this country. Mm-hmm. Cherry is one of the biggest figures in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
And Bettman decided, not going to comment.
Private company, let them do their thing.
Right. And now, this is your company.
Right.
And
multiple organizations, not just a Calgary thing or a Rockford thing.
Yes.
A Carolina thing,
and
among others.
The further it goes along without some sort of comment from the front office, the more it feels like the old, we're going to see if this blows over so we can move on, which is a strategy that a lot of companies use. In the 24/7 news cycle,
right,
it moves quickly. But this has been a very emotional, very volatile week for the sport.
Yeah.
And Bettman's the commissioner of the sport. I just want to hear what he has to say about it.
So, they released a statement condemning the language, if true, investigating it.
Mm-hmm.
They are investigating it. I think Hakeem Liu is on his way to New York to talk to the league offices.
But according to Trey Living, the matter's closed.
For them.
Okay, but like, are a part of the NHL community.
So they're going to have a... I'm just like, what could Gary Bettman say that would appease you?
Well, I think
I'm Gary Bettman. I'm going to come out, and he's going to say something to the effect of, "We looked into it, conferred, reprehensible."
Well, I think he needs to represent his sport here. Like, there seems to be a referendum on the sport,
right?
Like, it is getting pretty heated here with social media, with accusations being thrown around right and center.
Yeah.
And again, these are not topics that are germane to on the ice.
Yeah.
This is bigger than that. It's cultural in nature. We're talking about some pretty heavy, heavy stories here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if as the spokesman for the league, and that's effectively what he is, and the protector of the brand more than anything else.
Yeah.
Some sort of commentary
on
the week.
I
think is necessary.
What he's got to come up with, though, is not just comment on... Like, he's going to say hockey's a great sport. These are bad situations. Both things can be true. Hockey has 98% really tremendous people and lessons in it, and 2% awful experiences. They can both be true. What I would probably want to see, though, because I think that's all obvious. Now, you probably should get out there and say it anyways, maybe to your point. You just got to get out there. You got to have a voice. You got to have a sound clip that they can play. This is the commissioner denouncing, acknowledging. Moving it forward.
Right. There's a lot of focus on our sport right now. Here's what I have to say about it.
But I think moving it forward, does there need to be we are going to have a, whether it's a think tank or a focus group or a something to come up with a coach's conduct handbook, guide, things that are acceptable, that are not acceptable. We're going to have to go and try to identify for all sports. I think hockey's not the only sport that has this kind of situation, but we're, you know, what's acceptable, what's appropriate, and what is not. And maybe we have to do a better job identifying that, not just for NHL coaches, all the way down the line.
And
if that is something that comes out of this, I think that would be, if I was listening, he could say the first stuff, I'm like, okay, I'd hear it, I'd kind of tune it out, because that's what I know he's going to say. The next part, I'm like, okay, that's interesting. I want to look more into that,
right,
what that means for the sport going forward.
And to be clear, I'm certain, and I'm sure you would be certain, and anyone would be certain, they're talking about this constantly in New York.
Yes.
Like, this is the only story that matters right now. And I'm sure behind the scenes, they're trying to come up with a reaction to it all, how they move the league forward, the sport forward, how they prepare for potentially future stories coming out, because this one might have caught them off guard. There's no excuse for being caught off guard the next time in terms of how you're going to react to it and how you're going to deal with it.
Yeah, and I really hope we're not going to hear an Akeem Liu kind of story coming out. I hope.
I hope it could happen.
I don't know.
And no one's going to be surprised if it does.
But I hope. I hope. But to hear the Carolina Hurricane kind of story about coaches maybe crossing the line and being overly physical, that I don't think we're done hearing with. From coaches that have coached in the past and maybe some guys who are still currently coaching.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now,
do we call that, and I think this is a radio, is that physical abuse? Is that the term that is appropriate?
Yeah, I think so. If you're punching someone in the head or kicking them when they're not prepared for it, I mean, I don't know. What I hope is, if these stories come out, and we know that they've happened in every sport, no sport is immune to this, coaches abusing power or management abusing power. This has, you know, been happening in every single sport. But people are careful with, you know, retweeting this story and not following through with the proper, you know, check marks to make sure that everything is true, which is difficult to do. Like, Akeem Liu is separate from that. It was his story.
Right.
I'm telling you what I went through.
Right.
But
which is his truth.
His truth.
Right.
His story. And that happened with the other player down in Carolina.
Yeah.
Mikhail Yorinen, who came out and said, this was me. I'm telling you my story.
Right.
But in terms of how the league is going to handle it, I guess we're going to find out. Like, it's just a matter of time, because there's going to be some more stories. And in terms of how you title it or how you describe it, I guess, you know, physical abuse.
Yeah.
And there's a separation with every single case.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I don't look at the Babcock Marner thing. That wasn't abuse. It was stupid.
It was manipulative.
I didn't like it.
A bit of a power abuse in the sense that
it was mistruthful and it was greasy and he put him in a bad spot.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, it's nowhere close to punching a player in the head on the bench or a racial term or anything like that.
And like stuff like Babcock scratching Jason Spezza.
No, that doesn't
count.
That's
not abuse. That's just coaching.
That's exactly.
You don't have to do anything. Put a guy on waivers, take him off the power play, sit him on a game. Like,
right.
All that is not nice. Yelling at a player.
Yelling is still going to be in the
yelling,
game.
Yes. Like, we can't do that in office. I know that. We don't work in offices. Mm-hmm. And there are things you probably can and can't say clearly. But, you know, yelling at a guy trying to find, or a girl, like trying to find a way to motivate your athlete as best you can. And that's what makes it tricky, right? It's all just within a spectrum of stuff that is not acceptable in the norm. You can't yell at someone in the office to start doing things better. Mm-hmm. You can't. But you can in a dressing room. And they're up until a point, and there's a point where you can't go any further. And trying to define that point is so hard, because it's not the same for everyone. Even the people involved in it.
Right. How the players react
to
it.
How they feel about it. Someone yelling. Like, you know, Mitch Marner seemed to be pretty clearly upset about it 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys might not be. Both are completely rational and fair reactions.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find that definition, that point, is what this next bit is going to be all about.
That's, I think, imperative. Yeah, you've got to set some guidelines, and you've got to have a standard. and it's going to have to apply. So Hockey Canada has issued a statement on what's been happening in the hockey world the past 3 weeks. So speak of the devil, I mean, we were talking about Bettman or the NHL kind of addressing this. Hockey Canada has decided to do that. We'll get into that a little bit later this afternoon. Three pretty wild games in the NFL yesterday, and a big one on Sunday. The Niners taking on the Ravens, potentially a Super Bowl preview. Michael Lombardi, our NFL insider, will join us. We'll look back on yesterday, tee up Sunday next. All right, we have a pair of Maple Leaf tickets to give away. Leafs taking on the Red Wings Saturday, December 21st. Every day this week, we have been providing the clues to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And today, you will have a chance to call in and name that Leaf. The final clue. Following his retirement, this former Maple Leaf began working with the NHLPA, where he remains today. I think I know this answer now.
Got him.
I just figured that out.
Well, I mean, could there be more than... Yeah, well, it's...
I think we both know who it is.
His seats were beside mine in the stands. So his two seats were beside my two seats. So whoever I sent to the game sat beside whoever he sent to the game.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So we got to be friendly with his...
Was that at the Gardens or the ACC?
The Gardens.
Okay. Yeah. Old school.
Yeah.
416-870-1050. 416-870-1050. Call in and name that Leaf, and you're going to see the Leafs take on the Wings. So yesterday's slate of games, the biggest story is the Cowboys just getting spanked. And naturally, people are going to focus on Dallas because of who they are and their brand, but it should be more about Buffalo.
I was surprised. Maybe not that they won. I mean, Buffalo was, what were they, 8-3
going into the game.
8-3 going into the game. So they're a good team. But maybe because they don't get as much credit because they haven't been good for long enough to go in there and kind of dominate.
They laid a beating on
them. And physically put it on them a little bit. It wasn't, I mean, the one trick play was nice. But generally, you know, running on them.
No, it was a statement game.
It was impressive.
Statement game. Here's a former NFL executive, writer with The Athletic, host of the GM Shuffle podcast, and our NFL insider, Michael Lombardi. How impressed were you with the Bills yesterday, Michael?
You know, I mean, I was really impressed with the Bills. I mean, they finally beat a team that they did more than just try to run the football. I mean, all year they've run the ball, and they've played good. They played every team close. They haven't really dominated a game up until the last 2 weeks when they went and they really dominated. I know this sounds crazy, but they dominated a Miami team that hadn't been dominated for a while. They played really well against them, and then they dominated, you know, they came back, they got able to dominate Dallas, who is supposed to be a good team. So I think what the Bills are doing is they're playing good football. Their defense has been really good. They've been able to, you know, get the turnovers that they need, and they protected the football. They've only had one turnover in the last 5 weeks. I mean, that's pretty impressive. And considering, you know, there's been some games, the New England game, they turned it over four times. The Jet game, they turned it over four times. But for the most part, they've done a good job. Those eight turnovers are in two games. The other remaining 12 games, they've only had five other turnovers. So they've protected the ball really well.
I have been skeptical of Josh Allen as you know, a true stud number one quarterback. But he is looking good. I mean, his arm has always been there. It's been more about the reads and his touch. And he's a big, powerful dude that can run, and he ran for another touchdown yesterday. I'm starting to come around. I'm starting to believe. Where do you stand on Josh Allen?
You know, well, the last 6 weeks, I mean, the last 3 weeks, the three-game win streak that they've had, they've scored 37, 20, and 26. So they're scoring points, which is, you know, important. But more important than scoring the points is he's making throws down the field. You know, he's averaged over, you know, yesterday he was over 9.5 yards per attempt, critical stat in football. He's made five plays the last 3 weeks of over 25 yards. He's thrown six touchdown passes the last 3 weeks, only one interception. So he's played really, really well. And when you break this down, I mean, it really comes down to his ability to throw the football. We know he can run with it. We know he's hard to tackle because he's a big man. But his ability to throw the football is critical. And I think in the last 3 weeks, they've run the ball so that it's limited the amount of times he's really had to throw it. And he's been effective when throwing it.
So, Michael, the Bills are good. And Josh Allen's good. What are the Cowboys? What do we make of them? Jerry Jones apparently pretty emotional coming out of the post-game locker room area. Where do they go? I know they have the big game against Philly coming up, so they can still get to the playoffs. But did we overstate how good we thought they would be before the year?
Well, I mean, look, they start out 3-0. They beat a bad Giant team, a bad Washington team, a bad Miami team, right?
Right.
Then they play teams that are good, New Orleans and Green Bay. They lose to both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Then they come back and play a bad Jet team, but they don't have either starting tackle. They lose. They come back and they beat Philly. They beat the Giants. And all of a sudden, Philly was playing at the time not very well. Then they get stomped by Minnesota. They beat Detroit with a backup quarterback. You know, for me, I'm sensing that Dallas is what they are. They're a 500 team. They're not good enough on defense. When they have to play more than 30 minutes of defense, they're not effective. When they can play less, they're much better. But I think what's happened is because they become so pass dominant, mm-hmm. they've lost Zeke Elliott as the key component to what they need to do. And I think that's been a big issue for them.
Is that on the play calling of Jason Garrett? Because, I mean, so much of made when Zeke was holding out. We got to have him in this offense because he makes this offense work. Now, Dak's having a great year. He's going to get paid. But is that on the play, you know, the game planning, play calling of Jason Garrett to have gone so far away from that?
I think a lot of it is on Garrett. I mean, look, you know, I think at some point he has to show his influence into the game, and I don't think he's done that. You know, I mean, he's got to set the game plan up that gives him the best chance to win, and sometimes you've got to slow the game down to help you, and I think ultimately he hasn't been able to do that. So, yeah, I put the blame on him. I mean, this is his team. He's the head coach. I mean, if not now, when? I mean, he's been there 10 years. He's going to have to make some plays.
With Michael Lombardi, our NFL insider, and we've been tracking the Dak Prescott contract and the potential numbers all year. But when you look at the splits, like when he plays a team above 500, he morphs into bad Dak. And that's what happened again yesterday. Like, he could not, outside of that first drive, he did nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, well, he's had a couple of decent games. He played well against Minnesota, I believe it was. But last week against New England, he couldn't do anything. So,
no, well, the weather was a factor there, too. And that's part of it. You know, they weren't prepared for it. I mean, let's be real honest. I mean, in the second quarter, he's got to go over and get a glove to put on his hand. I mean, that shouldn't be the case. He should be prepared to play that way. So, look, I don't disagree with you, but I think a lot of it is the setup. Kellen Moore, you know, people went crazy. We're trying to get him a head coaching job earlier in the season. And every time he's played against an experienced coordinator, he has struggled. I think there lies some of the issue, too.
Have you ever seen three straight onside kicks recovered by the kicking team?
Outside of Pop Warner.
No, never.
I thought never. Sean Payton was going to run on the field and strangle somebody. Like the third time, he was going crazy on a special teams coach, I believe it was. But how do you explain that for the Saints?
You know, sometimes it's one of those things that just happen. I can't explain it, but I'm sure they're practicing that a lot this week.
Yeah, no kidding. David Blau, quarterback for the Lions. Is that a name we'll never hear of again, or should we remember that name?
No, I think he did a really good job in the back of row. Actually, I thought he was better than MVP Mitch, even though Mitch let him down the field. Look, Detroit's horrible on defense. If you can't throw the ball against Detroit's defense, you're not going to play ever. If David Blau was, if you switched teams, it would have been really ugly. I think Blau showed that he's got enough moxie to play in the league. I mean, unfortunately, he just didn't get enough protection. And when they needed him most, I mean, they couldn't get it down the stretch. I think Detroit should have blitzed Trubisky more. They didn't. They let him sit back there and get comfortable. And look, when you're playing against a quarterback who has problems processing and you give him time, right, he's going to beat you. They're still pro quarterbacks.
Ravens, Niners this weekend. Who do you like and why?
You know, I'm leaning towards the 49ers only because I think somebody's going to play them close. I think the Niners' defense is athletic enough to play their base front and play against Lamar and what he's trying to do. I think it'll be a great game.
Enjoy, Michael. Really appreciate you
Thank
doing
you.
This as always. Michael Lombardi, your NFL insider.
That'll be fun to watch.
That'll be a great game.
I mean, it really will.
It could be a Super Bowl preview. Like, at this point.
Do you see that the picture every week that Lamar Jackson has a great week? There's a picture of him, and I don't know if it's with his mom or with somebody on the draft table, and he was just sitting there in the green room basically all by himself waiting to get picked. Last pick of the first round, I think, mm-hmm. right? 32nd.
Yep.
And copycat leagues in every sense. I wonder if teams will be searching that next guy. They're obviously worried about guys running as quarterbacks because they get banged around a lot. But I don't know.
Well,
it's just you watch him go.
He's
but he can throw it so
talent.
Well, right?
That's
like it's
the
not
thing.
That's the thing. Like the question marks coming out is: was he just a great athlete who played quarterback?
No.
Or he's a quarterback who's a great athlete.
He's dropping dimes
and he can sling it around.
Yeah. No.
Plus, when it breaks down, he's elusive.
Well, and that is what was evident yesterday. You look at Josh Allen. Allen, he's got the...
I saw one in the second quarter. He went, like, sidearm, three-quarter arm into a tight little window.
Oh, yeah.
And, like Favre-like, or Aaron, like, just zipped it into a space that most other quarterbacks would have been knocked down, maybe picked off, but he's got a lively arm.
He's got a rocket.
Yes.
It was always about his reads and always about his touch, but he can throw the ball like 70 yards down the field standing still. He's got a rocket, and he's built like an ox, and he can run.
The fumble first, fourth and one.
That's him, man.
That's him. Fumbles the snap. The fourth and one.
Yep.
Picks it up. Doesn't fall on it. Go smart enough to know that I might as well try to pick it up instead of just drop on it because it's fourth and one. I'm going to lose it anyways if we don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Picks it back up. Goes over the top. Gets stood up. Digs in without the help of Ella's offensive lineman, which we've seen in the last few weeks. The offensive lineman kind of shoving guys over the finish line.
Yep.
And overpowered the linebacker.
That's him in a nutshell, man.
As a quarterback.
Yep. And that's the new age is, you know, not necessarily built to that size, but mobile, willing, you know, the RPOs, it's all about RPO at this point.
Yeah.
And when you look at the night game last night, Matt Ryan, Andrew Brees, now Brees got protected beautifully. He didn't get touched all night. But Matt Ryan's offensive line is so pathetic. That Falcons line is absolutely pathetic. But Ryan can't move anyway. So he can't help out his line.
Right.
Like Allen can, Jackson can, Wilson can, Mahomes can move in the pocket, Rodgers can move in the pocket. You know, that's where we're at right now.
You've played sports. You know what it's like after a really physical game. Like the kind of just the general body soreness. I think Matt Ryan's feeling today.
He's got to feel awful.
Just brutal.
Yep.
He is ice bathing it up all day.
He'd be doing Thanksgiving, I guess, today.
Right.
Probably. They pushed it to today. And I'll bet you he has set up shop somewhere and is not moving.
He is in the cryogenic chamber trying to find some way to alleviate the pain.
He got a mess.
Hammered. Yeah,
on that fumble, he got hit so hard. And the stiff arm when he threw that pick.
That was tremendous.
That was one of the best stiff arms I've ever seen in my life.
Get off me.
Just thrown right through the core of the earth. He went right through the turf.
He got 8-degree turf burn.
He got blown up.
That's when quarterbacks should just be wise. Say, you know what?
Yeah.
This is why I don't tackle people.
Well, exactly. A lot of quarterbacks, like as you get older, Ryan has that status. It's like, I'm not doing it.
You run towards him and then you fall down.
Yeah, that's not my fault. Yeah, I threw the pick, but I'm out. I don't get paid to tackle anybody.
Freeman caught him anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
Let the speedy guys catch him.
Let somebody else do it. Mike Johnson in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider, in about 15 minutes. Might get to some Maple Leaf trivia at some point, too. Seems to be a theme this week.
You good at it?
Yeah, specifically the late 90s.
But like 97 to 2000 would be preferential.
That's in your wheelhouse?
Can you imagine? You just crush me on it?
Imagine I beat you. Who was Mike Johnson's, you know,
that's right,
first center opening night?
Exactly.
Or when did you score your first goal? If I can answer that stuff and you can't, you
currently
need to leave.
The GM of the Tucson Roadrunners.
I don't even have that answer.
From the same hometown as Shania Twain.
Claude Loisel?
Steve Sullivan.
Stevie Sullivan.
Sully.
There you go.
The Timmins Tornado.
The Timmins first Tornado. Centerman.
Just gave me the greasiest stink eye when he saw his name written beside mine on the board.
Not happy, huh?
No. Like completely upset. Like, who was this guy? Can you imagine me? First game. I don't know what we're supposed to do here, but first game. I haven't met anyone. They're late in March. I've not been part of the team organization. No draft, no camp. I just walk in, free agent signing. There was an optional skate that morning, so I didn't even meet any of the guys in the morning. So the first time I meet people is at the game, 5 o'clock. I'm walking around. I'm scared out of my mind. Hey, I'm Mike. So first line, they go up. I don't even know who I'm playing with. I don't know anything about what's going on. First line is Berezin, Sundin, Modine. Clark, Sullivan, Johnson. They write down 20.
No way.
And I'm like, so I look at Clarkie, and just for some glimpse of acceptance, like, please give me a wink or a here we go. He's yawning or having a coffee. Like, he's like, yeah, whatever.
It's a preseason game. You couldn't care less.
No, it's March.
It's a real thing.
It's a real thing. Yeah, I left school. It's like March of.
Oh, okay.
Like 15 games left. They're 2 days before the trade deadline.
Oh, I thought you were talking about a September game here.
It's like 2 weeks.
Okay.
Just after they traded Gilmore, turning the roster over. So he's like, whatever. I look at Sully, maybe. Even though I think I'm older than Sully, he'd been in the league a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and he's like,
Yeah.
Because he's trying to establish
his
career.
I'm trying to make it here.
And I don't need to lug around some college kid who doesn't know what he's doing. I felt like so small. I give it to Sully all the time whenever I see him.
Yeah. Such a welcoming introduction.
And then he went out and had one and one and he was all happy. He liked me after that.
Well, he just never, I don't know. It didn't take here in Toronto for him, for whatever reason. Like, I think like Quinn got on and didn't love him, I believe, if I can recall correctly. But he had a great career beyond that.
He was awesome. He was one of the best small guys I play with. Probably second to Marty St. Louis. I mean, he was awesome. So, Sully, good job with the Roadrunners. Bad job with your line mates.
Yeah, there's one. I wouldn't have gotten that Mike Johnson-related trivia.
Wow.
It would have taken me a long time. I mean, late 90s.
I'm up 1-0 already.
Late 90s is blurry.
You'd be what? Are you born in?
I'd be in my teens at that point.
82 or something?
83.
Okay.
So, like, I remember the 99 run, but it's one of those things where there was so much turnover when you consider even 99 to, like, 2002.
Yes.
Like, Matz was a steady presence. But, like, you were saying that Clark was still playing when you were. I can't picture that.
Yeah.
Like, I can't picture Wendell being on that team with you. I don't know why. I just can't.
If you looked at the roster of my first game, maybe we'll call it up later. There would be a handful of guys you would have zero recollection of ever playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Marcel Cousineau.
No.
JFK Jr., Matt Martin.
No.
Who else was on there? Jamie McCowan. Now you probably
remember him. McCowan. He was
Rob
a part of the
Zettler Z.
I remember him, of course.
You know, they had Jeff Ware played around that time.
Oh yeah.
So there's all kinds of Freddie Moe, Sergei Berezin,
Old school. Old school. I like it. I mean,
Craig
it's the Gardens.
Craig Wallanen.
I remember him.
You remember
vividly.
Him with the Leafs?
Yeah. You'd be surprised.
I sat beside him one day getting dressed. He put on 17 braces. He had knee braces, elbow braces. I'm like, what are you doing still playing?
Just grinding.
And then I told him, I'm like, I will never be you. I will never do that. End of my career. Here comes my knee brace. Here comes my wrist strap.
You're just
three shoulder surgeries
an
later.
An absolute mess.
I am that guy.
Pierre LeBrunner, Hockey Insider, in the next hour. We'll continue to touch on the Raptor game tonight. Josh Leuenberger, a Raptors reporter, will be in studio at 6. They're in Orlando taking on the Magic. And we're tracking a lot of NHL games out there, so we'll keep you up to date on what's going on. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN app.